Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with interesting people. Today, the part of my interesting conversational partner will be played by my good friend, Rebecca Burnick. Rebecca is the founder and big head of Office Heads. Who is Office Heads, you ask? Well, they're a company that gives entrepreneurs and creatives the financial tools, processes, and the team needed to boost each business to its greatest success. I know it sounds super sexy. And as always, before we get started, I want to mention our sponsor, or rather, this is where I would mention our sponsor, but we don't have a brewery sponsoring us yet, so I'm just going to talk about one of my favorite beers, Guinness Draft Stout. I've got a nice frothy glass sitting in front of me right now as I talk to Rebecca. If you run a brewery, if you know a beer who'd like to be the sponsor of Beer Beats in Business, please reach out to me. And hey, if you work for Guinness, more than happy, just back a truck at Guinness up. We'll talk about you all day long. So with that, Rebecca, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am, as always, living the dream. And we have actually had many of these conversations in the offline world, so I'm really excited to be able to have one of these recorded and to share them with everybody. But here's, I think, the place for us to start, and you know both of these things very well. How is running a business, especially looking at like a small business, an entrepreneurial business, and specifically the financials of that, how is running that similar to trying to beat a motorcycle land speed record? Go.
Yay. Oh, I could talk about this all day long. So when I started my business, I, at the same time or shortly thereafter, started racing motorcycles. So I had 15 years of experience of running small businesses, but this sort of brought everything together of having this dual experience at the same time and realizing that there are so many parallels. Mm-hmm. So I could talk hours and hours about this, but I'll try to be brief.
You know, I only have one beer. I only have
What? We usually have more beers than this. What?
Today, just right in front of me. The kitchen's far away.
So the way I like to look at it is, if you're a business owner, think of yourself as the motorcycle racer. And your goal is to, your job is to understand the goal of what you're trying to accomplish, to see the vision of where you want to go, to be efficient and fast and speedy to win the race. So that's kind of lofty, but how do you get there? So if I take a look at motorcycles, you know, I have a handful of records under my belt, but I didn't do it all myself, right? So I had a pit crew. Mm-hmm. I had people that maintained the bike and helped me with what I needed to do, people I could lean on and ask questions about. So in business, you have to have a crew, you have to have people, you have to communicate with those people, lean on them, ask questions, allow them to guide you and to support you into this big lofty thing that you're trying to accomplish. Another thing is, you have to have the right race bike. So, you know, right, if you're trying to race and you have your tires are flat, you're not going to go that far.
Right.
So
right.
You have right. So you have to have the right, in business terms, processes. So we like to build financial engines, but there's also sales engines and various other different types of engines in an organization that should be running like a top. So you, as a business owner, don't have to think about them. They run smoothly in the background, and you're just going out there and doing what you need to do to win.
Right.
So those are just a few.
Yeah. And so I think there's a couple interesting things you said there. One, which is, and by the way, Rebecca is being very modest. She actually does hold a number of land speed records set around the country, but my favorite story is the ones in the salt flats. So the two things actually stood out to me. One is just this idea that you need to have a pit crew. You need to have people around you. And I think there's this mistaken idea, and definitely in entrepreneurship and business ownership, but really kind of just in our society, of like the lone hero, leader, visionary. You know, people think that Steve Jobs like ran Apple on his own, right? I mean, it's this huge, huge multi, you know, national corporation, but there's only one person that
at the head,
made him out, right?
Yep.
And I just think that all often people, I don't know how to even say it. Like it warps their perception of what it really takes to be successful.
Right.
One, I thought that was it, you know, and I think you're absolutely right. It's any good leader has that crew around him. Right. And the second thing, and this, you know, it helps that I have some knowledge of the actual racing that you did, is you weren't necessarily racing super fast motorcycles, right? It was kind of like, it'd be a different category, like one that was made in 1983 and as an engine only a certain size. But what was really interesting to me is when you told me that story, is you would tune the engine differently based on what you were trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. And that's why you need someone else to be able to do that. Cause my job was to get on the bike and be tucked and be small and to be as tight as I could be and aerodynamic as possible and go fast. But you're right. We raced vintage motorcycles. So okay. Most of my records are on a 1954 BMW R90/2. So, and it was cool. Production.
Okay.
Right off the, you know, off the floor. So there was nothing special about it. So it was built to go 60 miles an hour and I got it to go 83 on asphalt and 79 on the salt. But you're right. We would go out to the salt flats, and if you've never been, I highly recommend it. It's such an eerie, beautiful, wonderful place to be. Then of course you put motorcycles and cars on there. It's more cool. But it's like going to the desert. It's cold and chilly in the morning, and then it's really hot and somewhat humid. It depends on if it rains. And so with the pressure and the wind and the temperature, you have to tweak, and we couldn't do anything major to the engine, but you have to tweak the jets and to make sure that it's absolutely tuned to the place where you are so that you can get the most out of the engine. And I've done land speed racing and I've done road racing. Land speed racing is about the bike, and road racing is about the rider. Because when you're on the road, you have to, you're leaning and you're dragging and you're knowing the apex, and it's really, you're dancing on top of, you're dancing with the motorcycle. Where with land speed racing, you're just going straight in one line, and that machine needs to be ultimately tuned to get the best time.
Gotcha. So to nail the or to beat the nail into the coffin. I don't even know what metaphor I'm trying to say. to take this over to the business side, I think one thing that I would say, or at least I'm hearing, is, so if we look at, you know, financial engines or sales engines, you're right. There's so many different types of engines and structures and processes within a business that it's not necessarily just about tuning them to an ideal setting, right? It's setting it at the ideal or to the ideal setting based on what those goals are, right? Based on what you're trying to accomplish. So if you're in a huge growth mode, you might actually set again a sales engine or a financial engine differently than if you're like, hey, we need to, you know, bring in some capital, or we need to maybe just shore up our customer service. We got a bunch of clients. Now we have to make sure if we're really taking care of them right. You'd set the business differently in some ways, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, we've got a whole schedule that I call it the office heads track map, because I've aligned office heads with my motorcycle experience, right? So we're financial. So I look at the race as being a 12 lap race, which is 12 times. So it's every month. It's one year. It's every month. And every time you go around that track, you're doing specific things in that month. So you might be, you're doing your bookkeeping, you're running your payroll, you're reconciling your accounts. But as efficiently as you're doing all of that, you're also understanding your financial reports. So I like to say then there are pit stops. So in this track map or this race, this 12-lap race, every quarter you should be running your quarterly reports, analyzing them, and seeing if you met your goals and if you didn't, understanding why, and tweaking those goals. And so I will really like to chunk up goal setting and measurement in quarters. Because if you say, I've got a goal in 12 months, I want to double my revenue. Great. How are you going to efficiently figure out what you do every day and every month in order to double your revenue? Well, if you put that into quarterly chunks and you go, okay, well, I need to sell this much, and then I need to hire this person to perform this work. And then you can not only, those goals are more attainable,
right?
But you can also celebrate more often. You know, because you look at what I've done, and I, you know, pat yourself on the back, because business ownership is pretty tough.
It, really?
Oh, yes. Man. I would never change things, but yeah, you know.
Right. Everybody's like, I'd love to go and run my own business like you. I go, oh, maybe you want to, but let's, you know, here's the full picture. So the question I would have is, where do you find, you know, let's say people that are coming to you as clients, or just, you know, people that you meet who run businesses, what are the biggest mistakes they're making, you think? Is it that they don't have the engine at all?
Yeah.
Or is it like, you know, the carburetor's missing? Or is it more that it's just tuned wrong? Which are you finding?
I would say more likely it's they don't have the engine at all, but okay. It also depends on where they are in the stage of their business. We work with a lot of entrepreneurs who have been in business for several years. They've proven their model and they're ready to take the next step. How do I hire? How do I do this? Mm-hmm. But they've been operating on processes that didn't advance with the advancement of the organization.
Right.
So they typically come and they go, hey, listen, I'm making this much money, but I don't have, and again, we're financial. So I don't have systems in place. I don't have the right digital tools. I don't have policies and procedures. I don't have the right pit crew.
Because they just have a drawer full of receipts somewhere.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things are they're so busy delivering work that they don't invoice. And so we had a stat in 2015 that 100% of our clients increased revenue in the first 12 months of working with us on average of 97%.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what the secret was. It wasn't that I was telling them how to sell or do how to deliver. It was we put a system in place. We actually invoiced. So we asked for money and then we collected very efficiently. So,
sure.
And just by putting that in together, the money comes in. So there you go.
I've met businesses who do exactly what you say. And to be straightforward, I've always been blown away. I'm like, why are you working just for fun? one of the few things I did right from the very beginning is every Friday, there was a time in my day where I was like, do all your statements, do all your invoices, email. Make sure that you're actually getting paid for the work.
Yay. You're not typical.
Well, as we know, there are many ways that I'm not typical for good and ill. But it's interesting. You talk about kind of the idea of systems not growing with the business, because that's something that I see a lot too. I don't think that's just a financial wonderful. There's a big old truck going by. I don't think that's just a financial thing. It's something I see obviously a lot in the sales engine part of the business, where especially startups, right? They just start picking up business. All of a sudden, they've got five salespeople, which is great because they've grown so quickly. But yet, there's no actual sales process.
Right?
There's no sales management. There's no structure to it, and it works for a little while, and then it doesn't. And then the wheel falls off, and they're like, why did that happen? You're like, oh, because there was no axle, right? You need it. By the way, we are going to completely beat this metaphor into the ground, by the way. So all you listeners, I apologize, buckle up.
Well, I'm a process person. I think in boxes and arrows. So even when someone's talking about something, I'm already figuring out, okay, if this, then that, what, and who's going to do it. And I'm already like building the mechanics of a process when someone talks to me. And I always think about the big picture and then come down into what we're trying to accomplish. So if you think about it that way and actually put some forethought into what you're trying to do, hopefully you're building a scalable solution.
Right.
I'll give you an example of a client. Oh gosh, they've been with us now for maybe 8 years and they were a brand new company. They didn't have any employees yet. They haven't been, I mean, they weren't selling, they weren't doing anything.
Okay.
And so we came up with a process because we were doing all of their financial stuff and they were like, okay, when we sell something, how are you going to invoice? How, because you're remote, how are you going to do this? Uh-huh. We came up with a form and a process. And once this happens, you fill these three things out, you send it to us, and then we can do the first, the second, the third invoice, and boom, boom, boom. They were at pre-revenue when we created the process. We tweaked it maybe once. They've been with us for 8 years, and now I think they're a $10 million company with 20 employees. And that's one of the things where I just pat myself on the back and go, I built something super scalable, and their bill to us or our bill to them has really only increased with cost of living because we built something that our services didn't scale with their revenue. We made it so we're still super efficient in the background and they can grow and grow and grow, but we're still delivering the same amount of service that they need.
Nice. Well, one thing I find too as well is kind of the converse problem, especially in the world we're talking about with startups and entrepreneurship, is that instead of building a scalable process, they build a process that requires size.
You over-engineer it, yeah.
Right, over-engineer. Or, you know, hey, this will work great as long as we have $5 million in revenue. And they're not there yet.
Yep.
You know, and I think that this is kind of some of the problems you're even seeing on a massive scale, where you see how many businesses right now have IPOs and are not profitable. Like, yeah. I mean, and again, that's a whole nother, the land of the unicorns is not my world. I'm sure that makes sense in some universe, but it's like, well, we just need to have 1 million customers. And then this is a super scalable process. And you're like, wait, but how does it work for 10? Maybe that's an area where I'm a little ignorant, and that's fine. But
well, you know, I think we just different perspectives. I come from a bootstrap world. You do too, right? You're just like, okay, let's make it efficient and work right now. And like I said, quarterly basis, you can have a 5-year plan. You can have a 3-year plan. Even investors don't want a 5-year plan. You're like, there's so many things that can change between now and then.
Right.
So if you have a 12-month plan, you chunk it into quarters, you tweak it. And that the beauty of that too, if a small business is, you can be quick and nimble. And if you aren't, if you don't have the processes and you're not aware and checking on things, you know, 12 months later, you look back and go, oh crap, I should have made a change in month 3 that would have shifted the course of my business, but I wasn't paying attention. So I really like that every 3 months you kind of make a plan. I'm going to do these 3 things in 3 months. Did I do it? Did I not? Why? Tweak the process, make new goals, and go for it.
Well, you're course correcting, right? And you're doing it at a scale where it's not too often, but not too infrequent.
Yep.
Right. When people come to you, like, what are you seeing as some of the biggest challenges to, let's say challenges to implementation, right? Because I think most people would be like, oh yeah, systems and processes, that sounds great. And they might even sign up. They might, you know, work with somebody like you or do it on their own. What are some of what have you seen are some of kind of like the reasons that it doesn't get executed?
Well, you know, so with us, we implement for someone. So the actual implementation is not hard because we come in and we analyze things and say, here's your digital tools. Here are the people who should be on your team. Here are all the processes for the money coming in, the money going out. Now we need to maintain it. So this is the piece of maintenance. And we've got different levels of clients. Like, some people are totally do it yourself. We build it, we teach them how to do it, we wave goodbye. And that is then the discipline of actually implementing our processes, which if you're super busy in the first place, or you might not be number inclined, you know, you might not like numbers in the first place, maybe you shouldn't be doing it. But even if we're doing the whole thing, there is a partnership. So if people, I would say the not implementing would be the inability to let go of control, maybe. Because what we want people to do is, don't worry about this anymore. We can do it. You go out and sell and do and grow, and we'll deliver you really good reports once a month and teach you how to read them. But if they can't let go of that, that's a piece. or if they just don't want to, they're not willing to change. Because right. some people will come to us with a more of a chaotic kind of a operation model, and we are trying to tighten it up. And if they still, if you still keep your receipts in a drawer, even if we have all of the tools there to be able to get them digitized and into the system, I just can't help you. So right. those are probably the two.
Well, interesting. Well, because so it is very much a human issue often, right? It's not so much a process issue, and that right, you've got great processes, and I know your business well enough to know that. But a lot of times, it's kind of the stereotype of the founder who maybe is very gifted or is that visionary or comes up with a great idea, a great product, but is like can't give up the control, right? Yep. For whatever yeah. human reason, whether it's an ego-driven thing, a fear-driven thing. And I think that affects more than just the finances, right? It tends to affect all the
yes
parts of the business, but relatively common. I mean, I've run into those people. I'm sure you run into a couple. So yeah. there's not much you can do in that situation, is there?
Right? Well, no, there isn't.
Not and, you personally, but I'm saying in general.
No, in general, you're right. And so, and this is, you know, one of the things that I've learned. There's a lot of things I've learned throughout my 11 years of being in business, but it's not just listening to and building that engine in my head while they're talking. It's also analyzing what the person is saying to see if they are a good fit for mm-hmm. us. And so, and that's more of that squishy soft side, which I tend to be more logical and Excel spreadsheet and, you know.
That's why we hang out. We balance each other out. It's all good.
Yes, I'm getting better. I mean, it's a slow path and a slow journey, but I'm getting better. But I have gotten better to go, okay, are they going to fit our we have values here, and do they fit all of the values? And the values are, you know, we've got like curiosity. Are you curious and willing to change? And, you know, things like that. And I have to kind of put them through a mold, like when I'm hiring an employee and also when I'm looking at new clients, I see if they're really, truly a good fit, because then we can just really grow their company if everybody's working on the same, you know, on the same team. But if they're not, it's just, it's only painful when you have to break up.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's only so much you can do to change. I think at that point you say, here's a number for a therapist, go figure some things out, then come back. Well, here, I love this conversation, and I want to switch it a little bit to a small business that both you and I know and are big fans of, and that's a local brewery here in Evanston called Sketchbook.
Yes.
And I've actually had Caesar, one of their founders, has been on the show before, and I think it's close to me. I live 5 blocks away, but you're about, what, 50 feet?
About that. I can hop on 1 foot. You know, I was thinking the other day, I was in my kitchen. I'm like, what smell? Someone's baking bread. No, it's hops. I can smell. It's right across my alley.
Well, I'm glad it's 5 blocks away, because if it was across the alley, I'd spend even more time there than I already do. So they're it's been interesting to watch them grow. I mean, and we both kind of have had ringside seats to this. But they started where they used to not have even a tap room.
That's helped me when you say that it's good that it's 5 blocks away. When their back door was in the alley, I seriously could just zip in and out. Now I have to walk around the block to go to their front door. So
right, makes it a little harder. Now they're expanding their tap room. They're very actually exciting. Adding another tap room in a neighboring town. What was interesting, and maybe this, you know, talking, I want to talk about scalability in this through this lens. They've grown very, very slowly, right, over their time. I mean, they did a Kickstarter to get going. I said they had the basically this back door. They actually have a beer called Orange Door, named after the door, that the color of the door. You can only go in and get your growlers. And they had this very small tap room, and they've just kind of very slowly grown and grown. Do you think a lot of businesses grow too fast? Do they grow too slowly? Like because you're dealing with a lot of growth oriented organizations.
Yeah.
Is there a right way to grow?
No, you know, in my opinion,
that's a nice specific question for you.
That is a tough one, because I think it's all about whether you're prepared or not. And so if you're prepared for fast growth, then great. If you, get surprised and you don't have anything in place, and it could crumble. And if you're too excited and you see fast growth and you jump on it, but you don't pay attention to all the ramifications of fast growth, then it's going to, so it just really depends. It depends on if you have a pit crew and you have people who are tapping on the back and going, hey, if you do this, this other thing then breaks. So, right. I think it depends on the mindset, the team, and kind of where you are. What is slow growth and what is fast growth? I mean,
it's all relative, right?
It's all relative. Yeah. I mean, Officeds has been around for 11 years. We had kind of like Officeds 2.0 that actually kind of rebooted on January 1, 2013.
Okay.
Right. 2013. So it's been about 6 years. And so we doubled revenue the first year, doubled revenue the second year, double revenue the third year. After the fourth year, which I'm going, oh, this is awesome. You know, that hurts after a while, doubling.
Right.
You know? And it's, there's staffing issues and there's, there's computers to buy, there's software as a service where every single employee that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's just all, and I need a bigger space and all of that. And you get to a point where I actually said, I don't want to, even though I went, if I double, I can hit this number, and getting really excited. But I thought, I don't want to work that hard. It hurts.
Right.
So we slowed down a little bit, and then we had kind of a quiet, and then 20% growth was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2018 was huge. Like, we doubled our roster. So then we had like a spurt. So you never know. You never know. It's just easy, hard, and even if you have the opportunity, it's really hard to say no to growth, because you never know. I mean, because there's so many people out there who don't have the opportunity to grow. So
right. That when it comes across, you got to take advantage of it. But even just the fact that you said what you just said, which is, hey, I took a step back from it. I was like, I don't know if I want to work that hard, or, you know, that awareness, because doubling, if you're doubling every year, it seems like, oh, we're just twice as big. No, you're doubling every time. That's, I always get mixed up if it's exponential or geometric as far, but it's all of a sudden it's 4 to 8 times to 16 times.
Yeah.
As you said, that's a lot. It's a lot of software licenses.
Yes.
But so having that awareness and having that consideration, I was sharing with a friend, there's a quote I came across once that said, growth for growth's sake is the same ideology as cancer.
I picture it.
Yep. Right. And so, yeah, it's hard to turn it down, but sometimes you do have to go. I mean, it's seductive. It's not even hard to turn down. Like, it's actively going like, hey, don't you want to come over and, you know, look at all these great things that are going to happen. And, you know, there's all the quote unquote virtue signaling of being a good business owner and entrepreneur because we're growing. But it might be great, but it might not be, right? So just having that, I'm hearing too, and that idea of the pit crew is, it's not just having people who are good at a skill, right? It's not just have, you know, to again beat that metaphor into the ground. It's not just about having somebody who can tune the engine exactly right, but somebody who's also willing to say, hey, yeah, I can make that happen, but we might blow the engine because it's too hot today. Do we really want to do that, right? Yeah. Or that could be dangerous to you, because if this blows, you know, the whole wheel could fall off. And is this really what we want to do? So somebody who's got that ability to
look at the big picture and to participate in what you're trying to accomplish. Yep. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, exactly it. You know, I have, from my experience, my 15 years at a management consulting firm, I learned a lot. So you know, I pulled the motorcycle stuff in, but what I learned from all of that is I spent a lot of time with Fortune 500 companies, and small companies can benefit from what they're doing in the big organizations just as much, but just on a smaller scale.
Right.
So I have what I call, I think the number changes a little bit. It's either 12 or 14 areas of internal management. And so the acronym is your AIM. And so even if you're a solopreneur, you should just acknowledge that these areas exist, and you might not have to do something about them, but there might come a day when you might have to.
Right.
So for example, one is people management.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a solopreneur, there's nothing you need to do with people management. You just go, I'm the only person, I'm self-managed, I'm good. Right. But with me, I doubled, and all of a sudden it's like, now I have hiring, and now I need to recruit, and now I need an employee manual, and now I want to do benefits, and now how, so you've got, it's just, you know, you go into business like you're a plumber and you love to fix toilets, but eventually you can't do it yourself, and then you bring someone on, and then all of a sudden, do you need insurance? Do you need, so there's all of these areas that you should at least acknowledge exists. And while you're sitting down every quarter and you're looking at what are my goals, what's going on, do a scan of these areas of internal management, where in the corporate world, they're divisions, they're departments, right? You have this department, that department, you got people running them. But just acknowledging and saying, is there anything I need to do in this area? Technology, do I need a new computer? Do I need a new phone? You know, so just taking a moment, and that's the mindset shift of just being an entrepreneur and just go to, every so often, like you had on your Fridays, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to work on my business and not in my business. And slowly you become more strategic and more of a CEO and less of the entrepreneur who started the business.
Love it. I mean, the idea that your biggest challenges I've always found in my career and working with clients too, is that the biggest challenges are the things that you don't know.
Yep.
And those are always the ones that bite you in the butt. And to a certain extent, you can't necessarily anticipate every surprise or every emergency, but it actually doesn't take a whole lot of work to go, hey, let me make sure, you know, people might like, let's make sure that the big boxes are checked.
Yes.
And even if, especially when it's in an area that you're not as excited about. I mean, that's what I would always tell people, that one thing that you don't like doing, find somebody who knows that, and you can somehow, whether it's hiring them or just having a mentor or just having somebody who looks at it and goes, hey, that's probably something you should look at, right? If you don't like doing numbers, get a bookkeeper,
find somebody, having the right people and the right seats on the bus, right? Just having the right people around you. You know, speaking of the fear of not knowing what you don't know, I remember when you and I met, you know, you're the salesperson, I'm starting a business, and you had asked me what my sales process was. I went to bed for 3 or 4 days. So I'm like, there's a process out there that I didn't know. And because I was very highly caffeinated for the first 6 months of my business, because I would go and I would meet with people, I'd drink coffee, I'd tell them all about how great it was. I never asked for anything at the end. I never said, hey, we should work together. Everybody went, that's great. I went, yeah, I know, right? And then I'd leave. Then I learned there's a sales process.
that asking for the business can sometimes be helpful.
Yeah, a little bit. I've learned.
Yes, you have. Well, now you're a sales badass, so it works. hey, I wanted to go back to sketchbook. What's your favorite sketchbook beer right now?
Honeybird.
Honeybird. Which one's that?
It's the tasty one.
It's a tasty one. Let's face it. They have.
They're all tasty. I don't know. I'm not a big IPA person.
Right.
So I don't like what I would say is twingy beers, right? But even their IPAs are good. Even their, like, Orange Door is good. It's like a not so twingy of an IPA. But I don't know what kind of a beer Honeybird is. I think it's got some basil in it. But I do know that the first time I had it was at a Custer Street Fair 2 years ago, and it was hot and it was very tasty cold. And I just went, this is one of the best beers I've ever had. And now they keep having it, so I drink it.
Nice. Oh, I mean, that's the first time I had their Kolsch, which is really good. I'm actually pretty excited. They now have American Stout. And, you know, I'm a dark lover with my beers. And they've had some real winners, and they've had a couple of challenges. Some they haven't quite got all the way across the finish line. But this one, they definitely have.
So you've had it. It's good. Yeah.
No, they've had it for a couple months now. It's going to be perfect for the fall weather. And they also have their Oktoberfest, which is I'm a big Oktoberfest fan. I actually kind of like that it's only available a couple months of the year. Like, it makes it feel like,
beer.
Yeah. I mean, I can't get behind pumpkin spice lattes and stuff, but, you know, a good Oktoberfest beer.
Well, I should go in and try the American Stout, because the fact that you are drinking a Guinness, you know, a good, nice, chewy, dark beer.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll park the car when I go home, walk over 2 doors, and grab myself an American Stout. Doesn't that sound good?
I think it sounds fantastic. I like it. Any other fun beers you're drinking right now or any other beverages?
No, but I did for some reason, you know, you can guess as to why. I read an article about how to drink more healthy to avoid a hangover.
Okay.
And if it was from a nutritionist who is, you know, the typical things of drink water in between and all this kind of stuff. But I had a recipe. As a matter of fact, it's right next to me. It's called, it's not right next to me because otherwise I would know what it was called. Avarita, which is an avocado margarita. So you blend up the avocado, you have your tequila, there's lime in there. There's a couple other things, but not syrupy or any of this stuff that would give you the headache.
Right.
And then like chili powder on the rim. I think I'm going to try that.
I mean, it sounds bizarre. How about this? I'm going to let you go first and you tell me how it is. And I'll just have a margarita and then maybe an avocado salad.
Okay. And I'll let you know, because of course what goes along with it is the need to have to clean the blender. So I don't know how, nobody wants to clean the blender. So I don't know how long it'll take before I get around to that, but it sounded interesting.
It does.
I don't have to have a hangover. That would make me happy.
Well, you just got to hydrate a lot and, you know, drink in moderation because we're not 21 anymore.
Darn.
We're just in our mid 20s. All right. Well, with that blatant lie, I think that's actually probably a good place for us to wrap things up. Hey, Rebecca, if people want to follow up with you about anything you've talked about today, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Oh, go to the World Wide Web to officeheads.com. And as soon as I'm off, I just updated the website. So it's going to be really great to look at, all the wonderful things that we do. So
I know I think there's a picture of you on a motorcycle, actually.
There's a couple of them.
So you can check that out. And also, this would be the time where I talk about our sponsor. I said we do not have one, but we are actively inviting your participation if you are a brewery. If you're as big as Guinness, all you Diageo people, feel free to give me a call, or as small as our local brewery here in Evanston. We'd love to have you sponsor the show and tell all the lovely people about your beers. And with that, hope you dug this episode, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business podcast.